Many of us are like kids on Christmas morning when we get a new electronic gadget, the cell phone, the TV, the computer. It's shiny, it's new, and we expect to love it forever. And like a Christmas toy for a child, it's usually replaced within a few years, which means we put the old device in a closet or a drawer or a box or some other hiding place until we're ready to dispose of it. And dispose of it how? Electronics contain some substances that would present problems in a regular landfill, so they have to be handled a bit differently. Jackson County will host an e-cycle event this weekend with a number of partners. This gives us a chance to talk about the event and the process of e-cycling, which is about taking e-waste or electronic waste and handling it properly. A couple of guests in the studio and a couple of guests on the phone. Mark Decker is the technology director for Jackson County. He sits across the table from me. Mark, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Kurt Spivey is with us here as well. He's the vice president of corporate development for ECS Refining, one of the partners involved with taking the stuff away from this weekend's e-cycle event. Kurt, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And also want to invite on the phone, welcome on the phone, Loretta Pickerel, who's the manager of solid waste policy and program development for Oregon DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality. Loretta, welcome.
Thank you.
And Jason Linnell's with us as well. He's the executive director at the National Center for Electronics Recycling. Jason, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Jason, why don't we start with you, actually, because the idea of electronic recycling, how long has it been in place, and are we doing enough of it at this point, in your opinion?
Well, it's been around for at least 15, maybe 20 years, if you start in the early days of, say, the metal scrap yards starting to get in things that were coming in, whether it's the newer personal computers that were starting to come back in and be replaced by newer ones. But it really, it took off maybe 10 or so years ago, and we've seen a lot of activity since then in terms of new states like Oregon passing laws about electronics recycling or voluntary industry programs where there's more being collected by manufacturers and recyclers and retailers. But to your other question, I think, no, we have not done enough. There is still a number of products that are out there collecting dust in basements and in cellars, and they need to come out. They need to get in the hands of proper recyclers so that we can reclaim those resources and keep some of the more hazardous things out of our landfills.
Loretta Pickerel at Oregon DEQ, how do Oregon's laws on e-cycling compare to anything at the national level or other states?
We have comparatively strong laws, I believe. We have one of the highest performing electronics recycling programs in the country, and that's our primary program for collecting waste electronics in Oregon.
And so, Mark Decker, technology director for Jackson County, how did the e-cycle event come about? Has it been done before? Is this a first time or a repeat?
Well, this particular event is unique. We're doing some things at this event that we haven't done before. Collection events where people can bring their electronics have happened before. But the idea for this one actually came from one of my employees, Matt Schmidt, who the topic of this came up, and he was saying, boy, it would be neat if we could, you know, help people with the security aspect of this thing and things that don't necessarily enter most people's minds. So we're adding a few services to this event that aren't in most events. One is the reuse aspect. And then the other one is helping people recover or secure the data that is potentially coming in on these devices.
Hard drives and things like that, I understand, is one
right.
of the components here. Yeah,
there's a number of different devices that can contain data, and a lot of people don't know that they contain data, and a lot of people don't know that when you delete a file off a computer, it's not really gone.
Just the pathway to it?
Yeah, it's like removing the table of contents from a book and leaving all the chapters there.
Interesting. So so what services are you offering at the e-waste event, the e-cycle event? What do you want to call it, e-waste, I gather?
Yeah. Well, you know, the focus obviously is on recycling and reuse. So in addition to just free drop-off of electronics, any types of accepted electronics can be dropped off for free. And in addition to that, we'll be going through the stuff that comes in looking for reuse opportunities. So if there are electronics that are still in good shape that somebody might want, we'll be setting those aside. And from 9 to 4, you can drop off materials from 2 to 4. Those things that we pull out of the waste stream that are reusable will be available for people to come and search through and get for free. The other thing that we're doing is that we'll have technology professionals there to disassemble computers and remove the hard drives from them so that they can be securely disposed of. So we'll be doing that. We'll be removing those anyway. We're not going to be putting hard drives on the reuse floor. But then anybody who really wants to make sure that their data is inaccessible can make a $5 donation, and then we will actually punch a hole in that hard drive while they watch.
Hard drive destruction, I suppose.
Hard drive destruction. That's one sure way to make sure it can't be reused.
So let me get this straight again. Between 2 and 4, something of a picker's paradise, the things you've been able to pull out of machines people can...
Yeah, it's pretty much, you know, a yard sale, but everything's free.
All right. Kurt Spivey, tell us about what goes on with ECS Refining and how you're involved with the E-Cycle event.
We take the material that is collected at the event and we process it back into raw material for manufacturing. And, I mean, that's a quick summary of what we do, but it's more technical than that. All this e-waste that is collected in the valley is brought down to our facility, which is about a 350,000 square foot facility in Stockton, California, and in also another in Dallas, Texas, and we have several locations around the country. But we process the material back into raw material. Zero landfill and zero export.
Really, zero?
Zero.
Huh. You're able to get all the stuff back.
Everything. It's each facility has $10 to $15 million worth of equipment that is fairly sophisticated in separating the different mediums from plastics to copper, metals, all the different metals. And they're all used, reused, and sold back into the foundries for reuse.
All right, we'll talk more about that process and what goes on there. Kurt Spivey is with the Vice President of Corporate Development for ECS Refining. We also have Mark Decker from Jackson County, Loretta Pickerell from the State of Oregon DEQ, and Jason Linnell from the National Center for Electronics Recycling. We'll talk more about e-waste and what happens to it once it leaves your hands, and we'll talk about the e-cycling as in the event this weekend in Jackson County. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782. Or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Back to talk more about e-waste and e-cycling on the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls and emails in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about electronic waste or e-waste and how it can be e-cycled, as the expression goes now. There's an e-cycling event coming up this weekend put on by Jackson County and several partners. We're talking to Mark Decker, who's the Technology Director for Jackson County, Kurt Spivey, who's the Vice President of Corporate Development for ECS Refining, which takes the materials that are usable out of the gadgets and uses them again. Loretta Pickerell is the Manager of Solid Waste Policy and Program Development for Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality, and Jason Linnell is the Executive Director at the National Center for Electronics Recycling. So, Kurt Spivey at ECS Refining, back to you. You were talking about zero waste, really, that the stuff that can be taken out of these is taken out and used again. We're talking metals primarily?
No, there's metals, there's plastics, there's every kind of plastic. You know, there is found in any number of different electronic devices. And so it's a fairly technical operation that we have. Lots of technologies, even over the last 3 years, have been developed to separate these different mediums and ensure that they're all, you know, we do our best to reduce them back into their base raw metals for remanufacturing.
Yeah. So how is this a machine-intensive process? Do people actually have to get in? I mean, I can't imagine a machine could actually get into all the finer parts of
it's machine. Actually, it's people do not. We remove a lot of say batteries and things before they get processed through a shredding and separating, and then once it gets down into the circuit boards, it goes into metallurgical pyrometallurgical separations, and it's quite technical. It's an extensive operation to ensure that these materials are all processed back into the raw material that they came, that they started in, and then back into reuse.
Pyrometallurgical implies some kind of burning action.
Smelting.
Smelting, okay.
Yes.
So you're melting and burning.
You're melting. You're separating the base metals and separation from pyrometallurgical. There's mechanical separation and there's pyrometallurgical, and we do both.
Loretta Pickerell at Oregon DEQ, from the perspective of an environmental person like yourself, an environmental agency like yours, what are the major concerns if electronics are not disposed of properly? What are the major substances that are of concern?
There are a number of substances of concern if they're landfilled with potential leaching. There are heavy metals, flame retardants, chlorinated dibenzodioxins and dibenzofurans, hexavalent chromium, things like that. But our primary concern is the recovery of the valuable materials and resources embedded in those products. That is the main environmental benefit of reuse and recycling of electronics.
So recovery then?
Yes, it's the valuable materials embodied in the electronics and recovering those and being able to reuse those in making new products, either reusing the devices to extend their life or to recover the materials to make new products. That's where the real environmental benefits from electronics recycling come from.
Mark Decker at Jackson County, did this begin to become an issue for the county a few years back to think about what you do with the stuff? Because you do have to recycle computers every couple of years to just catch up with the latest technology, speed of processor, et cetera.
Yeah, and in fact, the county has a fleet of about 900 computers, and so every year we're replacing more than 200 computers. And so we've had to develop our own process and for responsibly reusing these. So what we do is, as we replace those computers, we do it after they reach about 4 years old. That's when they kind of really have struggled running the software we use. So we take them out and we take those four-year-old computers and we reuse them as public computers in the libraries when we can. And then any that we have left over, we donate to the local public schools and qualified nonprofits.
So, in essence, the slower computers that are going to be asked less of down the road, they're dealing with less critical information now, those are the ones that end up out there.
Yeah, basically, these older computers, they may not be able to run all the heavy-duty software we do at the county to operate the business of the county, but they might be perfectly adequate for email or browsing, and so reusing is obviously better than recycling. It saves a lot more energy, so the longer life we can get out of these computers, the better.
Jason Linnell at the National Center for Electronics Recycling, give us an idea of the scope here. I mean, particularly given that I think a few of us can probably point to a drawer in our house where there are the last several generations of cell phones lying in a heap. How much stuff is generated every year, and how much are we recovering successfully at this point?
Well, to give you some idea, you can take a look at some surveys that have been done over the last few years about just how many electronic devices everyone has in their home, and that consistently comes out at somewhere between 25, 28 different electronic items in your house at any one time, and that number may be growing with the rise of new devices like tablets and e-readers and all of those things that people are accumulating now. And it's kind of hard to judge exactly how much we are recovering, because these are devices that, like I said before, could be collecting dust somewhere and may not be passed along into the recycling stream right away. But we do know that as part of all the electronics recycling laws across the country, anywhere from 600 to 700 million pounds were collected just last year in 2012. And in Oregon alone, right around 27 million pounds were collected under the Oregon eCycles program. But there is more activity that happens outside of that. It's just not measured or reported anywhere. But it's safe to say that there is more potential devices out there that need to be collected, and we need to increase awareness about recycling programs so that we can get more of the items that may be sitting somewhere that may not be being put to use back into the hands of the recyclers and reclaim those materials.
Loretta Picarell at the Oregon DEQ, what are some of the things that people in environmental agencies like yours are most concerned about making sure are recaptured?
Well, we are, under the Oregon Recyclers Program, we're capturing or recovering televisions, monitors, and computers, and beginning in 2015 we'll add printers and computer peripherals, and we're looking at adding other electronic devices such as e-readers or games, but those, or some phones, those have not been added to our program yet. So we're limited to what the law allows us to collect. But there's a whole array of electronics, devices, as well as other materials we would like to recover. And our real focus is on looking at what are the high-impact materials that have high value, and how do we focus on those? So right now our emphasis is on looking at opportunities to recover more plastics and to recover more food waste and other organics.
All right. Not obviously e-cycle stuff when we're talking about food waste here.
Right. But in the electronics arena, we would like to add more electronic products. It will require some statutory amendments to do that, except we have some authority to add certain devices under our that are covered under current definitions of devices in our law, and we plan to explore that in the next year or so.
Jason Linnell, are state laws keeping up with the technology from your perspective, and national laws for that matter, too?
Well, right now we don't have a national law. It's something that was talked about before we started having states pass laws back in 2003, but we do have 25 different states that have laws, and that covers about two-thirds of the U.S. population. But it's very hard for the state laws to keep up with the pace of technology because at some point you have to write down a definition of what the product is you want to cover. And by just by necessity, those definitions become out of date. And you're looking at new devices that challenge what you've written down just 2 or 3 years ago, and you have to go back and amend the law or go back and see if whether you can interpret a new device to be covered under the law. So when the tablets first started appearing, they could be considered a computer or a video display or a monitor, but we're constantly seeing newer devices that challenge our definitions, and it's hard to keep up. But those things will eventually come back into the recycling stream, and recyclers will need to be able to handle them.
We're talking about electronic waste and electronic recycling, e-waste and e-cycling, with Jason Linnell from the National Center for Electronics Recycling, Loretta Pickerell from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, Mark Decker from Jackson County, and Kurt Spivey from ECS Refining. The county and ECS Refining and several other partners are teaming up for an e-cycle event on Saturday from 9 to 4 in White City. We'll give you more directions in just a few moments. Join us on the exchange, though, with your questions, comments, concerns about e-cycling and the stuff that does or does not go to landfills and where it goes once it leaves the e-cycle event or any other like it. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Kurt Spivey at ECS Refining, you talked earlier about the recovering 100% of the materials put in the electronics through the processes at ECS Refining, the smelting process. You'd mentioned earlier, too, that it's not just a matter of keeping things out of landfill, but keeping them away from export as well. I mean, what are the current laws about exporting electronics to other countries? That was a concern for a while, that there'd be dumping of electronics in the third world.
Well, Jason could really answer this a little closer. Each state has their own unique differences in their law. We have our own pledge. We're members of the E-Steward certified. We're R2. These are certifications within our industry groups that pledge not to have any export. And in fact, we're working on a national level right now to have that pass nationally that you cannot export. And we'd rather see the materials stay here, the raw materials stay in the United States, and the jobs stay here. As well as just the contaminating, the rest of the world with these materials that we could recycle perfectly here. So, I guess our corporate pledge is to have zero landfill and zero export.
How close a margin is it, though, to be able to do this business successfully and make a buck at it? Because I know that it seems like the more technology you have to put into and the more effort you have to put into extracting materials and turning them back into raw materials for manufacturing, it begins to get much more expensive than the cost of just shipping new raw materials from someplace else.
Absolutely. That's one of our biggest challenges with the export. There are a lot of other recyclers that don't adhere to the standards that we stand for, and it's a very difficult thing to compete with when it's a lot easier to shove these materials into an ocean container and watch them disappear to Africa or Asia. And from a pricing standpoint and being competitive in the marketplace, it is a challenge, as well as the prices. We deal a lot, because we're in the scrap industry, with the inflection of precious metals, and metal pricing has actually taken quite a hit this year, so it makes our ability to do what we do much more difficult. So it is a constant challenge. But, you know, we're dedicated to what we do, and most of the manufacturers that are in the 28 states, is that right, Jason, 28, 26?
25.
25 states across America that have producer responsible legislation or legislation of some kind, they want that material here. They want it processed here. They don't want it. They don't want to deal with recyclers that export. And so that's a good thing, but it is still a challenge.
Let us take some calls from listeners. We have Janice and Selma on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about electronic recycling with Kurt Spivey, Jason Linnell, Mark Decker, and Loretta Picarell.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my call. This is a little bit off subject. My sister in Montana is in charge of the recycling program for her county, and there is no place to send glass in Montana. She's been told the only thing she can do with it is pay to ship it by train to California, and she's just tearing her hair out because they stockpiled it for a while, and now it's just going in the trash. Do you have any ideas of who she might be able to call?
That's glass, you said? Just regular glass?
Yeah, it's just glass.
Okay, let's try that with Loretta. She might know.
Glass is a challenge, particularly in rural areas that are far from the glass recycling markets. But there are alternative uses of glass and engineered construction kinds of operations that some people here use. We do have glass recyclers markets available for Oregon glass for much of it, but we have issues with rural glass recycling as well. So in terms of calling, who to call, in Montana they would need to look at someone in Montana to look at what recycling markets may be around. Their state DEQ in Montana might be of some benefit.
But it
and
sounds like
then
some
I would look at who some of the glass recyclers are in Oregon, and if she wants to contact DEQ, we can help her locate those.
All right. Thanks for that question, Janice. Let's go on to Pam and Dexter. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about e-waste and e-cycling.
Hi. Well, this is, to me, a really important issue. A few years ago, I read an article, and it was about when they shipped all these electronics overseas, I think to India. They had children manually taking apart the components, and they were getting, you know, cancer and sick. And so I was wondering, first, if that's still happening. And then, secondly, I want to challenge the assumption that people need to get new computers and technologies every couple of years. My first laptop I bought from Next Step Recycling for $100. And it wasn't the computer that was the issue. It was my, you know, I had a DSL line, so my computer was plenty fast. And I just really think people are sucked up into this kind of elitist, having the newest, latest, best thing to look at a screen, to search the web. I mean, that's what most people do. And I really think we need to do the first of the three R's is reduce. And people don't need the latest gadgets. And to look at all the environmental implications on everybody having all these latest technologies when you're really basically, most people, some people need the latest for what their jobs or whatever, but most people are doing the same thing. They're just looking at their Facebook and searching the web and da-da-da-da-da. So yeah, are they still shipping these electronic waste to Asia, and are little children getting sick because they're taking them apart? And what can we do to actually reduce consumption of these electronic products and not make it, like, so important to have the latest gadgets?
All right, Jason Linnell.
I'll listen on the radio.
All right, thanks for that, Pam. Appreciate it. Jason, let's start with you on
the
whole sending materials overseas issue, the export issue.
Sure, yeah. That is an issue that has gotten a lot of attention in the media, and there have been cases where you can go overseas, you can see the harmful conditions that are taking place when you're breaking down electronics, and you know, not the best practices for sure. And I think one of the things that is being done, that has been done over the last few years to address that, is to get the recycling industry to be certified to one of two sets of standards. And Kurt already mentioned one, which is the e-steward certification. There's another one called R2 certification. And the recyclers that operate under the Oregon eCycles program, I think all of them meet one or both of those certification programs. And what it does is it gives you a level of assurance that they're going through, they're checking the appropriateness of their downstream partners, and those are the ones that are receiving materials from them, and preventing the type of activity where they're just taking in the materials, packing them without touching them into a sea container, and then sending them overseas for whatever destination it is. They just know they're getting paid by someone overseas that wants to take those devices off their hands. So we need to have more recyclers that are checking on their downstream partners, making sure then auditing them, making sure they're doing the right practices. But at some level, this is a global industry. It's part of the global commodities. You have to send some metals to overseas markets. You just need to make sure they're appropriate ones.
Why do you have to send them?
That's where all the commodities are being used. In terms of circuit boards, there's a number of smelters overseas that will take them. In terms of CRT glass, that is a big problem in the U.S. right now. There's really only one furnace left in India that will take in old CRT glass and transform it into new CRTs. So we need to look where the markets are that can use the materials that we're generating, and exports is a part of that equation.
All right, CRT, cathode ray tubes, are the big glass tubes that used to be in television sets and a lot of computer monitors. We'll come back and talk more about e-waste and e-cycling with our guests and take your phone calls and emails as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about electronic waste or e-waste and what is to be done with it. The optimum thing is to e-cycle, make sure it actually doesn't get to landfills and gets reused and put into new electronics. A couple of guests with us, a couple in the studio, a couple on the phone. We're talking to Mark Decker, the technology director at Jackson County. Jackson County, one of several partners hosting an e-cycle event Saturday 9 to 4 in White City out by the Vector Control District workings. Kurt Spivey is with us as well. He's the vice president of corporate development for ECS Refining, which will take a lot of the materials away and reuse them. Loretta Picarell is the manager of solid waste policy and program development for the Oregon DEQ, and Jason Linnell is the executive director at the National Center for Electronics Recycling. You can join this conversation on the exchange. Ask questions about the electronics you might have and what happens to the parts of those when they leave your hands. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to come back to our last caller's question because it was a two-parter, and Jason Linnell answered part of this already. The other part I want to throw back to you, Mark Decker, because Pam was challenging the concept of having to move on to new stuff. And you talked about a four-year cycle for computers in Jackson County. What happens if you don't do them after 4 years? I mean, I assume at some point there probably were longer cycles.
And it depends. Some things we are able to use longer, but it depends on the demands of the software we're running. I mean, she's right. There is kind of an arms race of technology where you can't really disarm unilaterally. The software that we run that we're required to use to do our job has certain minimum requirements for the computers we use, and so we have to use relatively modern computers. Once they get past about 4 years, they really start to impair productivity because they're just too slow. But as I mentioned, those computers, she's absolutely right, are still good for the basics of browsing and email and things like that. So we make sure that they're reused for those purposes.
So, for example, the ones that you mentioned bumping them down to the county libraries, for example, how old are some of the ones that are being used to just look up books and things like that?
Right. So those, card catalog computers and the public internet browsing stations.
I'm trying not to say card catalog.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. Those, computers range from anywhere from 4 to 8 years old. And again, we don't have, we're generating more than 200 computers every year. So most of them actually go to the public schools, which are happy to have them, and they'll install Linux on them, and they've got computers for the students.
And the advantage of having Linux in a non-Windows operating system is nobody comes in and tries to audit you every year, too, right?
Right, and also, there are flavors of Linux that are a lot less demanding on the hardware, so you can, get a lot more out of the computer.
Let us take more questions from our listeners. Gordon in Medford, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about e-cycling with our guests.
Hi. My understanding is that cell phones, when you're done using them, even if they've been deactivated, as long as they have a charged up battery, can still be used to call 911. Does anybody know about that?
Neither one of the two people at this table. Jason, you know anything about that?
Yes, that is correct. If the cell phone, it's something that the cell phone service providers are required to do. It's still required to be able to make an emergency call using their networks. Yes, that would be.
So here's my suggestion. If anyone listening has cell phones they want to get rid of, I recommend they contact their local domestic violence program in Jackson County. That is Community Works. And their phone number, you ready for this?
Sure.
541-779-2393. And extension 228 is the donations coordinator.
All right.
And
so,
in everywhere else that this program is broadcast, look up your own local domestic violence program, and those phones can be used by domestic violence survivors to contact 911 in an emergency, and they're usually happy to have them.
Gordon, thanks for that suggestion. 541-779-2393 for Community Works, extension 228 for the domestic violence program?
Correct.
All right, so the domestic violence program in whatever town. Thanks again so much for that, Gordon. Jason, back to you for just a second. Jason Linnell at the National Center for Electronics Recycling. Will a newer phone without a SIM card still be able to call 911?
I'm not sure. I think you would have to have some sort of SIM card in there to be able to connect to whatever network in there. It doesn't have to be an active, you don't have to have service on it, but you would have to have some sort of SIM card, I believe.
All right, something to make that work. All right. Let's take another call from Jamie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking e-cycling with Jason Linnell, Loretta Picarell, Kurt Spivey, and Mark Decker.
Well, good morning, Jeffrey, and good morning to the panel. Well, let's see. First of all, I'd like to ask the gentleman who is with the Jackson County Recycling Partnership. Is there still a Jackson County Recycling Directory to wit of www.jcrecyclingdirectory.org?
I'm not familiar with that particular URL, but there is absolutely a recycling directory that includes information about opportunities for e-cycling, but also all other types of materials.
Yes, the one I have here, it's something I printed out. And I leave it at the apartment complex where I live. It goes all the way from appliances to wood and yard debris. But my question specifically, Jeffrey, is this about since we are transitioning, I guess we're grandfathering out transitioning out incandescent bulbs. We're going to something called compact fluorescent bulbs the way to LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
What is the proper way to dispose or recycle or get rid of a compact fluorescent bulb? And I will take their suggestions and their comments off the air.
All right, thanks for that, Jamie. Appreciate it. Will compact fluorescent bulbs CFCs be taken at the e-cycle event?
Kurt, that's a question for you.
We don't. We do handle them. Actually, we have a vendor that handles those. They're very specific in handling the mercury and the phosphors, and they're special equipment to actually recycle those properly. We package those up. We work with Rogue Disposal also and take those in. And there are very specific companies that deal specifically with fluorescence. We deal with them in the flat panels. We'll have mercury. We have small devices. We do know we handle those. And we do deal a lot with something very similar to this as a CRT or a cathode ray tube, where it has largely phosphors and a lot of the same toxins, lead and problems like this. But we don't specialize on fluorescence.
We were talking about the CRTs just a bit during the break because it did come up in the last segment. The cathode ray tubes, the big tube TVs, mm-hmm. big tube monitors and stuff, and that's evidently a major, major issue for people in your line of work, e-cycling.
Yeah, it's the big gorilla in the room. Yeah, Jason could probably give us a better data on the percentage, but you know, even Loretta, I would say that out of all the e-waste that's collected nationally, it runs in the 60 to 65% of the volume that we see, certainly in the state of Oregon, or maybe higher, are cathode ray tube devices. And so the glass from those devices, which basically amounts to 50% of that weight, is a major issue.
Jason Linnell, do you have any figures on how big an issue CRTs are still?
Oh, it is a big issue, and I think that's about right what Kurt said. At least 65, in some cases we're seeing up to 75% of the weight that's collected from programs that get their material from households is going to be CRT monitors or TVs. And the big issue is that the markets for new CRTs and new CRT glass have gone away. There's very limited markets right now. And we still have a lot of that material coming back right now, and it does have the lead in it. You have to be worried about the leaded glass and managing that appropriately. So what do we do now that the markets are very limited, but yet there's a significant volume coming back right now, and that's the challenge that a lot of people are trying to figure out.
The market limited because there are not many new CRTs being made?
That's right. And there are some new technologies. I think ECS is one company that's looking at new technologies to remove the lead as a commodity and have a glass commodity as well. So if some of those things come online, there may be new markets that open up. But for the time being, there's very limited opportunities for recycling leaded glass.
All right. And we were mentioning that there's a connection or a similarity between the CRTs and the compact fluorescent bulbs. Loretta Piccarelli, I want to bring you on the fluorescent bulbs question about what the proper disposal for those is now in the state of Oregon under its laws and its recycling programs.
If the devices are intact, they can be recycled, and there are certain stores that sell those that will take them back. We would, in the metro area, we have the metro hotline that can direct folks to opportunities for markets for those devices. I don't know what the resource would be for finding markets for consumers in the Jackson County area, but they can be recycled. If they're broken, they need to be managed as a hazardous waste. If they're for households, the best opportunity would be checking to see if they could take this to a household hazardous waste collection event or collection facility.
All right, but if your store doesn't take it, you should not be throwing those in the trash, I gather?
No, they should not be thrown in the trash. They'll break and contaminate other materials and jeopardize the safety of the workers collecting the trash. So definitely they should not be thrown in the trash. It should be recycled intact, or consumers should contact their waste hauler to find out how they might get those recycled, broken ones recycled safely or managed safely. They probably won't be recycled at that point.
Okay. Mark Decker, you were making some signs. They have some information.
Yeah, so I just want to mention that the two major waste haulers in this area, Rogue Disposal and Recology in Ashland, both of the transfer stations here do accept fluorescent bulbs. Right here on Water Street, there's a recycling center. And then this eCycle event actually being held in White City, it's just down the street from the Rogue Disposal transfer station. So anything that's not accepted at the eCycle event, you can go right down the street and safely dispose of it there.
It's like going to a disposal shopping center.
That's right.
All right. So let's get into some more specifics then about the eCycle event, because it is in White City, pretty close to where Table Rock Road and Antelope Road meet. Give us more specifics then, Mark, about how people can find you.
Sure. Well, first of all, I wanted to give people the web address to get more information, which is www.jacksoncounty.org/eCycle. And there's a complete description of the event there, all the types of materials that we're taking, directions on how to get there, map, et cetera. But you're right, it's near the intersection of Antelope and Table Rock Road, so it's at the Jackson County Roads campus, Jackson County Roads Auditorium. And so if you're coming up Table Rock Road, just after you pass Antelope, there's a little street there, and you'll see signs that it's called Mosquito Lane, that lead right into the Rhodes
Auditorium. Which tells you close to the vector control.
Exactly. And so that's the place.
All right. Now, we talked already about the CFLs will not be taken, the compact fluorescent light bulbs. Any other things that people need to know will not be accepted at the eCycle event?
Well, other than microwave ovens, we're not taking any appliances. So if you've got a refrigerator or a water heater or things like that, those need to go to the transfer station, not to the eCycle event.
But you will take the microwave ovens?
Yes, microwave ovens we will take.
All right, but the refrigerators and stuff. And Loretta, there is a program in the state of Oregon to take you off the refrigerators, correct?
There are opportunities to recycle refrigerators. We don't have a statewide program for doing that. So the local waste sheds, which are counties, have different opportunities for handling the major appliances.
Will the Energy Trust of Oregon take away the fridges, though?
I would need to talk. Someone would need to contact Oregon Trust to find out. I don't know.
All right. See if we can find that one out. So what then is the procedure then, Mark Decker, Kurt Spivey, when people come to the eCycle event? Do they need to have the stuff in their trunk? I mean, how much time will they spend there? Will they be putting things on piles? And it sounds like there are some browsing opportunities as well.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, from 9 to 4, we'll be accepting free e-waste drop-offs. So You can bring anything that's on the list of accepted items. If you have questions about whether or not it's accepted, you can email us ewaste@jacksoncounty.org. But the only thing we ask is that you keep the loads dry. Kurt really needs for the electronics to be dry so they can be properly recycled. But we'll be bringing in a line of cars. We'll be doing a little triage to figure out if people just have, you know, waste broken things or if they have reusable items. And people can pull in. We'll have volunteers to help them unload and sort through that material. And they can be in and out pretty quick if all they're doing is dropping off. If they want to come to the reuse event, that doesn't start until 2 p.m. because we need the morning to collect and sort the items. That one also, there'll be some parking there, and people can show up and browse the materials, and hopefully we'll be able to reuse a lot of the material that comes in.
So, Kurt Spivey, how many people will you have to handle all this on scene?
Well, actually, the master recyclers of Jackson County are volunteering their time, and that's pretty much going to be the force there to assist the cars that are pulling in with their materials. We're just going to be there to consolidate it, wrap it up, and bring it back to our facility to send down for recycling.
All right, so I end up in Stockton then? That'll be where the separation
is? It all goes to our processing facility. It's the largest in North America. It's a modern's marvel you see on the History Channel. It's a massive operation.
How many tons of material can you handle in a day, a week, a month, whatever?
We process about 30,000 pounds an hour, roughly anywhere between 350 to 400,000 pounds a day. Complete process. It's a large operation.
All right. The E-Cycle event is on Saturday from 9 to 4. The Picker's Paradise is what I've been calling it, 2 to 4 in the afternoon. Mark Decker is the Technology Director of Jackson County. Kurt Spivey is the Vice President of Corporate Development for ECS Refining. Loretta Pickerells with Oregon DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality, and Jason Linnells with the National Center for Electronics Recycling. Thank you all for being here today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll follow up with the Medford police about the bombing at Medford at the district attorney's office in Jackson County in Medford. And we'll talk to the Geos Institute about its arguments about salvage logging coming up once again in the wake of this summer's fires. Then we'll talk to documentary filmmaker Raina Marie Loader about Art Inspires Ashland and her appearance there. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer and today's engineer, Charlotte Duran. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you so much for listening, and please have a great day.